There is so much stuff to watch on TV these days. That cable network FX does a survey every year and figured out there's something like 495 scripted original TV shows in 2018, which was like an 85% increase since 2011. And the increase is even bigger in unscripted reality TV because we cannot get enough Housewives and Kardashians, Fixer Upper, all those shows. We have more places to watch shows. A lot of that is on streaming these days. So today on Dying to Ask, we're going to talk about how TV gets made with Jessica Mathis. She's an executive producer for Hearst, which is our parent company, and she got hired last year to create a local show, non-news, and she's done it. It's called Word of Mouth. So Jessica and I actually work out of the same building, but our jobs are wildly different. And I'm going to warn you in advance, this is kind of like finding out how sausage is made. I might ruin HGTV for you, but at least you can go watch Word of Mouth. It's really good. So sitting in as my co-host this week, my news co-anchor, Teo Torres. He is totally my go-to when it comes to looking for a new TV show to watch. He's covered entertainment for years. He is entertaining. I'm a little worried Jessica's trying to figure out if she could cast us into a reality show. Hashtag what could go wrong. Here is Jessica Mathis on Dying to Ask.
Have you ever wondered, how did they do that? I'm talking about the art of the follow-through. I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and Dying to Ask is the podcast that gets me off a TV news set and into candid conversations with authors, entrepreneurs, and influencers I have been dying to talk to. So brace yourself. This is a verbal gut check about what it takes to go from idea to reality. And who knows, maybe along the way, you'll get some answers to questions you've been dying to ask.
Okay, so you work in our building, and you know you're like the big woman of mystery in this building.
I'm the enigma.
No one knows what you do in this building. They do know, however, that you have these beautiful pictures of your kids up.
Oh, like, that's so sweet.
Gorgeous photos, but nobody for months has known what you do. And so what you do is you come up with television programming and your show that you've been working on in all that enigma-ness. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
I think so. Yeah. It should be.
It should be.
If it's not, it should be.
It definitely should be. Anyway, your show is called Word of Mouth, and it's launching now, and it sounds really awesome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So Word of Mouth is unscripted television?
Correct. That is the correct term.
Is that like reality TV?
Well, this is a very good question. I don't know if we want to go down this.
I'm so glad I brought you here.
We could go down this road.
We can detour very quickly, but yes, you know, it's funny because people hear the term reality and they immediately think The Housewives or they think Love and Hip Hop. But in the unscripted world, reality and unscripted are synonymous. Reality can be your favorite show on HGTV, your Food Network. It could be a show like Amazing Race. Reality unscripted, it just basically means exactly that. There's no script.
So are Chip and Joanna, their reality?
They're considered reality, but they're lifestyle reality. They're not a docuseries or a docudrama, which is what Housewives is.
Right. Oh. And we'll get into this in a little bit. I want to know if there really is such a thing as reality TV. But we'll get into that in a moment.
Well, just really quickly, my tagline on Instagram is, I create reality, which is kind of interesting because, is reality really reality?
Well, there you go. Okay. So you do, and we can get into this in a little bit too, but just to let people know, give a perspective, you have worked on network or cable reality shows before, correct?
Correct. Working here at KCRA and a news station is very new to me. I've never done this before. I mean, I'm from Sacramento. I'm familiar with KCRA, but my career has been in cable television. I started off in the Bay Area, then LA, and ended up in New York the last several years. First on the production side, creating the TV with cameras and in the field, and then I quickly realized I wanted to develop or create television, so I switched to that development side.
So when you were in the field doing things, what kinds of things did you do?
Oh, there's so many jobs. You know, you start off as a PA, which is a production assistant, doing everything, basically being, you know, the person who, like, carries trash in your car.
The gopher, kind of.
Yeah, you have, you know, really important people, executive producers telling you they want burgers from In-N-Out and French fries from McDonald's.
That
type
fun.
Of vibe.
Yeah.
Did you ever just give them the In-N-Out fries? I so would have done that.
No, you know, I'm a people pleaser. I was a really great PA. I did whatever I was told.
What was the weirdest thing they asked for?
I mean, just, you know, these very specific things, like, you know, they want a Chipotle burrito, but they want extra corn salsa, but make sure that salsa doesn't have cilantro. Just like very specific requests or certain types of bottled water.
Seriously.
Were you just a regular lunch person? Was that?
Yeah.
Sometimes you feel like that's what you're hired for sometimes.
100%. I mean, that's basically what a PA is. Like, if you think you're going to be a PA and you're going to learn a lot about production, you should probably reset that expectation. But luckily, I was a PA on some very small crews, and I would advise anyone, if they want to get into the business, you should work and start out on a small crew. Right.
Because see, we say the same thing about TV news.
Really?
Yes. Go to a small town.
Yep.
Make lots of mistakes. Make an idiot of yourself on television. Not purposely. Mm-hmm. But do that. Make your mistakes before you come to a bigger place where those mistakes have like bigger repercussions.
I started
it's a great place
in Twin Falls, Idaho.
See, that's
teeny,
perfect.
Teeny, tiny little town. You know, and
you're the weatherman.
Made my mistake. I was a weekend weatherman because they let me because I was fresh out of college.
They let you.
And when it was sunny, it was hot.
There was no one else there.
When there was clouds, it wasn't as hot. That's kind of what I knew. So, but yeah, no, that's so. What are some of the shows that? Do you have a couple names you could throw out? Some of the shows.
Yeah,
you work on?
I mean, there's so many shows that no one's ever heard of. I worked on an HGTV show called Sleep on It. I don't know if anyone recalls this show. Shout out to the Sleep on It crew. Basically, it was a show that allowed prospective homebuyers to sleep in the house for a day before buying.
I absolutely remember that show.
It's a really good format because you don't know if there's going to be a guy who lives next door with a motorcycle that comes in at 2 a.m. until after you've bought your house.
Or a ghost.
Yeah, so we really legit did that. We had people sleep in houses, and that was cool. We did a show called Superscapes.
Can I ask you a real question? A real quick question about that. So when people would sleep on it, had they already bought the house when they were sleeping on it?
You know, it really depends with the schedule. Like, at the end of the day, it is a show that has a budget attached, so things have to happen on a timely, you know, timeline. If you could find someone that really was considering the house and the seller was on board with allowing this to happen, we tried to keep it as organic and as authentic as possible. But, you know, like house hunters, I don't mean to crush anyone's dreams, but those houses are bought way in advance. So
I helped a friend of mine, a girlfriend of mine who's a realtor, I helped her make her audition tape for house hunters, and it crushed my soul.
Yeah.
Because I loved watching
it. Did she get on it?
She did not. They ended up going with someone. It was a good tape, too. You know, I thought he did a good job. But I didn't realize that, like, these people have already committed to the house. Now, once you know that, you won't be able to unsee it. But if you watch the show, you can tell. And if somebody didn't edit it right, you can figure out which house they're going with.
Yeah, you can. And that's the thing with House Hunters, right? It's a game show. That's why it's such a brilliant
format. Sort of. You know, something that's interesting to me, and not to just stick with HGTV for some reason.
It's so easy to do that.
But there used to be so many different shows on HGTV, like 15 different shows. Now they have The Twins. Mm-hmm. They have Fixer Upper. And maybe another show that's in there. And I mean, that's all they show, like, all things. And then House Hunters is sprinkled
in
there.
And like a lot of franchises, like, what is it, Flip or Flop, This City, That City,
Mm-hmm. Is it just kind of whatever does the best ratings if they give it a couple months and then they kick her out, or how does that work?
I just think there's so much content, and networks are, they only have so much money, so they're a little risk adverse. And I think if they have something that works, they'd rather multiply that one thing than to take a chance on something. Because let's be real. I mean, the ideas that you pitch, probably 99% of them are not going to get greenlit. And then the 1% that get greenlit to first series will be canceled after that. It's kind of a lightning in a bottle scenario when you actually get a show that is like a House Hunters. That's like, that's the, you know, gold standard.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Or like a Fixer Upper.
Yeah.
Which they've tried to kind of repeat with other people, but they didn't find that lightning you're talking about.
Yeah, Fixer Upper is a special thing. I remember sitting, so there was this thing in New York called, what was it? It was like a mini kind of, they would invite a bunch of production companies to watch the shows that they were excited about. And I got to see the development sizzle for Fixer Upper. That show took, I think, 3 years from meeting Joanna and Chip to getting to the pilot.
Explain to people what a sizzle is.
Okay, so in at least cable television, when you find a talent that you really think is great or special, or you have a format that you think is cool, you need to visually translate that to a prospective buyer. And by buyer, I just mean a network like, you know, AMC, Discovery, et cetera. So the best way to do that is to create a sizzle. Now, a sizzle is just usually it's like a 2-minute video that is the highlights of everything that you want to sell in your idea. There's a joke, though, in the industry that you need to put everything at the first 20 seconds because network executives only have so much patience. So it's really sizzle editors are very rare find. It's a special person who knows how to cut together an idea that quickly.
It would be essentially the person who would make the preview for a blockbuster movie.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And
so our equivalent with what we do is called, are you squeaking your chair?
This is
not me.
I was going to interrupt us and say, do you want me to move?
It's the guest, not the co-host.
Guys, stop. Don't go throwing that.
I'm sitting on a table, so I'm squeaking. You know what we can do is I can, can you still hear me well if I talk like this?
Yeah, you can stand up.
You know what? Yeah. I need to like perfect my, is it quads anyway?
See, people wondered, would this place fall apart without producer Jeff? The answer clearly is yes. So the equivalent, like with what Taylor and I do, is called a resume tape. Okay. And you'll make a tape that's maybe like 5 minutes long showing all the amazing things you do. The reality is most news directors pop it in and within like I think I heard like 5 to 7 seconds.
They watch the montage at the top of the tape, and that's about it.
And same decide. Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you make those big decisions about it. So Fixer Upper took 3 years?
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, HGTV, like, early 2010, 11, was like a lot of format-driven television, Superscape, mm-hmm. Sleep on It. You could kind of plug anyone into it. Mm-hmm. And Chip and Joanna was a shift towards away from your kind of typical host and more towards almost like a docu, right? Like, Chip and Joanna were really doing that. They weren't television people. They were plucked out of... Where are they? Tulsa, Oklahoma,
yeah.
I think?
Waco, Texas. What do you think it was about?
Very similar.
Absolutely. There it is from Texas. What do you think it was about those two that people just responded to? Because, I mean, it's turned them into millionaires.
Yeah,
you can't walk through Target without tripping over a Joanna pillow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They're nice.
Yeah you know, nice.
They comfort the fall.
Yeah. I think that's part of it. When we watched that sizzle, me and my coworkers at the time, we immediately looked at each other. And it was a rough sizzle. It still needed work. But we were like, this is going to be a hit. You just knew it. And I think it's their chemistry is very, you know, it pops off screen. I think people at home, when they watch television generally, are looking for some sort of escape. And I think they see themselves in Chip and Joanna. I think they feel like they're their friends. I think their relationship is real. We get to see their relationship.
They do come off as very real. I think that's hard to find sometimes. Mm-hmm.
But they're those things. Plus, they have this very unique skill. You know what I mean? They are real people. They have an amazing relationship that we all relate to, but they're actually doing what they're doing. They each have their own strengths. They couldn't be successful without the other one. That's like stuff that you could put a casting call out for and get 100 people and you still won't find it. Right. Like, that was just lucky. Every development person wishes they could have found those two.
I have a friend who lives in Waco, and you know, I mean, that place is basically Gainesville at this point.
Yeah.
And so do people still like them? Or is there a resentment? And it's interesting. She said, no, they really like them because they made it cool to drive to Waco, which, let me tell you before, did not exist. It was a stopping off point. The Dr. Pepper Museum is there.
I love how you know that.
Really?
And then way back in the day, you would go to see where the Branch Davidian stuff happened.
Yeah,
but there was nothing. There really wasn't, unless you were going there to Baylor, to the school.
You didn't
go there for recreation.
Yeah.
And now it's like it's a cool place to go. And I think for a lot of people there, that was really a cool thing. Mm-hmm. But like you said, they haven't been able to replicate it with another couple, and they've certainly tried.
And they try all the time.
Yeah.
Well, Pioneer Woman, I think, is a perfect example of Joanna Gaines on Food Network.
Yeah.
And she was like the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma,
had
a great
family.
Blog, and she's not super dynamic on camera, but people just like the calmness, mm-hmm. I think, you know, and the soothing and the comfort foods and
biscuits.
Yeah,
I love biscuits.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I think that's a really good equivalent almost.
Yeah. But nothing against Pioneer Woman, but I would say that Joanna has a more broad appeal even.
Yes, like, I agree.
There's something about her. I don't know if it's because she comes from a multicultural background, but she's still in Waco. But it's like she's just checking off so many boxes for people to relate to.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's a bit aspirational to someone who loves a small town or to the urban person who's like climbing the corporate
ladder.
That is interesting because her style is so in right now.
Yeah.
You find it in a lot of lofts in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like
that. She could be an influencer. I mean, she is. She's not on Instagram.
My fiance and I often laugh because we'll have that show on. And we say, you could play a drinking game with the number of times she says shiplap.
Oh, you would have a drinking problem by the end of that show.
That should be our next podcast.
What is shiplap?
Let me tell you what it is. It's a wooden wall.
Apparently.
That's all it is.
And it's very, very popular.
We used to call it a wooden wall.
You worked on, was it, Deirdre told me, Ink Masters too?
I did work on Ink Master. That was
tell him what your job was.
Okay, so yeah, this is a weird one. But my title was the Human Canvas Producer.
What?
Doesn't that sound like some horror movie?
That sounds just terrifying.
Yeah.
It just sounds wrong.
Basically, I was in charge of booking all of the people for the entire season that would be tattooed by the tattoo artist on Ink Master.
Where do you find people like this?
That's a really good question. Depending on what type of tattoo I needed them to get, might direct where I would find them. Usually I would go, we'd go to tattoo conventions and set up a booth.
Right.
You know, we'd obviously do like...
Would you hang out outside
emails.
Of tattoo parlors?
No, I didn't.
Just try to grab their potential customers.
Luckily, I didn't go quite that far. No, I just did a lot of internet stalking. Like, I'm really good at stalking on the internet. That's what casting allows. Like, you know, you follow people's Instagram, you follow people's Facebook.
You're kind of a social media master.
You have to be. Yeah. And, you know, I had to find people who wanted to be tattooed. Well, didn't want to be, but I had to find people who were willing to be tattooed on their eyelids.
On their eyelids?
Yeah. You know, and here's
Jessica.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. I mean, I think, what was that, season two?
I'm sure there are people who do that, and if you have that, good for you.
Yeah, yeah, no judgment.
I don't get it. No judgment.
That's not for me.
How does that conversation start? Let's say Teo wanted to get his eyelids tattooed.
Just decided
I'd pay for that.
I mean, that conversation, it's usually just like a little dance, you know, because maybe you came to me as the human canvas producer because you're envisioning that you want like a really beautiful phoenix rising tattoo on your lower back.
Do it.
And then
another one.
You can read my mind.
But I need to cast for our episode that's about eyelids, not about phoenixes. Wow. So then I have to kind of say, oh, that's such a cool phoenix idea. Would you ever do phoenix on your arm? Or what about your neck? Mm-hmm. You ever thought about anything on like maybe your eyelids? And you just, you kind of just go there and
engage. Was that
people.
One of the hardest ones to cast?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
And, well, what were they getting on their eyelids?
I mean, little stuff. I don't even recall. Like probably, you know, like little letters, hearts, stars. I mean, what can you do?
It's maybe an eyeball.
The thing with an eyelid is, that would be creepy. No one did that.
Right? Someone should have. That would have been awesome.
It's such thin skin, your eyelid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think.
I have a couple tattoos.
Do you? Hurt. See, that's the interesting thing. Yeah. I still have no tattoos, but.
I was going to ask you that next.
Yeah, sometimes I lied because, you know, you don't want people to.
but you can't see it.
I mean, I didn't lie. I just kind of stretched the truth a bit.
Yeah. Well, okay. Funny. Well, there's always time.
Yeah.
Did you feel a little dirty?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I think
I probably could have asked it in a different kind of way.
I appreciate the honesty.
A hard job.
Yes, it's a very, very hard job. You know, I think. I have a very thin skin myself, and I'm kind of like, you know, a people person, and I did feel a little icky. Like, I want to be that person where if you come to me with your phoenix idea, I'm like, I'm going to give it to you. Mm-hmm. I felt a little dirty, especially with tattoos, they're permanent, you know?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I never had one person come to me afterwards and say, like, I can't believe you.
So you were there while they got tattooed. You got to see the finished product. It wasn't
I'm
going to cast you. See ya.
Yeah.
She's out of there, right?
Yeah, and there were times, you know, when someone maybe was upset with the artist they got and they'd start yelling my name and then we'd have to cut rolling and I'd have to go talk to them and kind of like almost a therapist on set, right? And be like, okay, well, how can I help you? And then I go talk to the artist and at the end of the day, you still want to make sure people are happy because if the show had put out everyone like hating their tattoos, it wouldn't have been the successful show. It's still on air.
A competition show.
Yeah.
You get some egos in there from the artists, I would imagine. Was that hard to deal with?
You know, yeah, there's egos with any of that stuff, especially with a competition show. But I didn't really have to deal a lot with the artists. Like, I interacted with them, but like I said, you know, human canvas producer was my role. So when I was exposed to the artists,
the
I know, it's on my resume.
Is it? I was going to ask the next. Is that what it says on your resume?
Sometimes I might
change
it to
casting producer.
Yeah. But yeah, that wasn't really my lane. But yeah, you see it. You know, that crew was huge. Over 100 people worked on the show. We were in a warehouse. Yeah. It was
So what drew you to making TV? Like, what did you grow up as a kid and watched a lot of TV?
Yeah. First of all, it was an accident, but I was 100% a TV addict. Like, I remember when I was 9, my mom bought me a VCR and cable in my room. Like, what 9-year-old had cable in the room in the
80s
or
90s? Fancy.
Yeah, I guess. And I loved, but I was weird. Like, I watched Gary Shandling's show and Tracy Ullman and Benny Hill. Like, I was really into these older shows.
Wait, can we just pause for a
minute? Benny Hill.
I've told you this. Benny Hill, my parents are from Ireland. And, like,
really?
That's what we would watch on, like, I think it was on Saturday nights when I was a kid. We would sit around as a family and watch Benny Hill. I watched it, like, recently on YouTube.
I haven't seen it first.
So inappropriate.
I was
going to
say, so inappropriate for a child.
Wildly inappropriate. For children, but
this has
really
formed
fun.
You.
Yeah,
yes.
Where this comes
and when
from.
We play that shiplap drinking game, you'll see
awesome,
how Benny Hill
awesome.
Has influenced me.
We'll totally do it. But so what did you, what else were you watching at that age?
Oh, there was that weird stuff. But then I watched, I think, stuff that everyone was watching, like, you know, 90210, the original, and Melrose Place, and Dawson's Creek, and Lois and Clark, the new adventures of Superman.
Yes, I know these.
And then premium content started happening, specifically with Sex and the City and HBO, and I was addicted to that. And
Did you have all the channels?
Yes, and I still do, you guys. I have Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, every cable channel you could want. We're thinking about getting Sling. I'm obsessed with content.
What's your favorite show right now, like series?
I really can't answer that. Oh, actually, no, I can. There's a new show that I love on Facebook Watch, which is so terrible for people. Usability is terrible. It's hard to navigate. But there's
I've
a show.
I've not watched that.
Well, Facebook Watch is...
I'm aware of it.
Yeah, the platform.
Right, right.
Strangers is the show. It's this new creator, Mia Ladovsky, out of New York. But it's just this web series that I love. Things that people might know. I saw Unbelievable recently on Netflix, mm-hmm. which is really, really good. I love Peaky Blinders. I love Great British Bake Off or Baking Show, depending on what country you're in.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm watching Mindhunter right now.
Oh, Mindhunter's amazing. Wait, have I seen... Oh, yeah, I finished season two.
So I haven't... I'm like episode 6, season 1 right now.
Oh.
I told Deirdre you got to watch it.
You 100%.
It's so addicting. It's fantastic.
It's amazing. And it's based on a true story.
Yeah, absolutely.
And oddly enough, one of the shows we were developing at one of my old jobs was a Ted Bundy kind of live action docuseries. So I did a lot of research on serial killers and the stuff...
Which is what Mindhunter is
about. Yes, Mindhunter is about the kind of the... birth of serial killers and how that term came about.
How they started
70s.
Profiling
them. Yeah, because before the 70s, there weren't really people who killed more than one person.
Right.
Well, at least that they knew of.
And they thought basically it was like PTSD from World War II, or we're talking back in the 70s. And they interview all these serial killers and find out kind of what motivates them. Where does this desire come from?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
And
do you watch these shows, though, for entertainment, or do you watch them like and study them?
No.
Can you do that?
I should do that, but I'm such a fan of television.
I love that.
I just shut off. Like, I guess there are certain things like, what's that show that's about reality TV? Gosh, what is it? It's like the scripted version of The Bachelor.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Fart.
Yes.
I'll think of it later. But I can't watch shows that are really like about reality, kind of the docuseries reality, because then I do start to see what's happening from behind the camera.
Well, and let me ask you. So I told you before we started rolling on this interview that I was going to ask you about this. So I have a problem with just the term reality TV.
Yeah, most people.
Because in my mind, because a camera's there, it's no longer reality. It would be such as, remember the scene from Broadcast News with Holly Hunter, where the cameraman goes, "Can you tie your shoes again?" She goes, "Stop!"
Yeah.
And he goes... Right. But unless you were going to tie your shoe, you know what I mean? She wants it to be authentic. But the fact that the camera's there, even when you're doing television news, makes it not reality. Do you understand what I mean?
I totally do, but I'm going to throw this one at you.
We
are talking right now, and there's a camera to my left. And I would argue that this is pretty real right now.
Yeah, that's true. Boy,
wow.
Never mind.
Score one for
no,
Jessica.
I think reality, I was listening to a previous podcast with, is it Rachel Hollis?
Yeah.
You guys were talking about black and white and the areas in between. And I think reality is one of those things that isn't black and white. I think there is a lot of gray because, I mean, I don't mean to get all like psychoanalytical right now.
No,
but
go for it.
Even in our relationships, what is reality? Who are we presenting to our moms? Who are we presenting to our partners? Like, I don't know. Like, what is reality, right? And I think with television, you have those moments where the producer comes in and you do like, okay, can you say that again? There was an airplane or in that moment.
It almost becomes scripted.
Well, but there's also that idea of curated authenticity, which is what I would argue is what social media is. You know,
100%.
We're not really putting out what happens to us all day long. For the most part, I know one person who does.
Right.
But for the most part, people put out the way they either hope that they'll be perceived or what they want you to know about them.
So it's kind of like a heightened reality.
Unless you find people, and this is when I feel like as a casting producer, you're like ready to just pop a bottle of champagne. When you find cast or talent, we call them talent, the real people. But when you find people who aren't filtering themselves in their head or editing themselves, and they actually are just their hot mess self and they don't know how they're being perceived. That's amazing. That is reality.
Chip and Joanna.
Yeah. And right. I think that was definitely Chip and Joanna. I think they've been doing this for so long. They're probably now producers in their head and are editing themselves as they go.
What would your, you know, I guess you could argue that maybe the first reality TV may have been Alan Funt's, what's
Candid
that show?
Camera.
Thank you. Candid Camera. But, you know, you're playing pranks on people. That was kind of the first glimpse of what was semi-reality TV. I would argue that maybe your first real broadcast reality TV show was something like The Real World, the very first season, where the producers were even like, nothing's happening, where they put a camera in front of, you know, seven strangers put in a house, and nothing really happened until it did, I guess. What do you think where reality TV started and where it is now, kind of the evolution of reality TV?
I think you nailed it. I think most people in the industry would say that Real World or Survivor were kind of the big moments that reality kind of jumped on screen. And I think my wife actually worked on Real World early on, so I know that very well.
Very cool.
But I think at that time, reality was so new that they were able to kind of shoot these people for long periods of time and kind of wait for those moments to happen. And to me, that's ideally how we should all do it, right? Because then you're getting that authenticity.
But sounds really expensive.
It is. That's the problem. It's really expensive. So you have to expedite that reality now. And that's where things...
Expedite the reality. I like that.
I'm keeping that.
So that's where things
Let's unpack what that means to keep with all the buzzwords.
That's fantastic.
Expedite the reality. Is that where, like you see on some of these shows, a la The Housewives, things like alcohol come into play?
Yes, that is one of the best tools to expedite reality.
Nothing makes people more talkative than a little booze.
Yeah, that's exactly
it. I can get anything coming again today.
Where do you think the future is for reality TV?
Well, that's a good question.
Because it doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
Probably word of mouth is what you should say.
That's exactly what I meant to say.
Other than your new show, which we're absolutely going to talk about.
We'll get to.
But that is a great segue, because I do think reality, television has trends just like fashion. Things go in and out. You know, there's a true crime moment happening. But I think the biggest trend right now, and it hasn't changed, is authenticity. And that does bring me to word of mouth. You know, my goal was to create a local show that featured kind of the best things the area has to offer. And I did a lot of research of local shows, and I was like, wow, how do I reinvent this? But I don't want to reinvent it so far that I alienate our viewers.
So what was your mission coming in?
My initial mission was to just come up with a ton of ideas and bring them to my bosses and see what people were responding
to. So they hired you to produce a local show about local things?
Not necessarily.
What was their pitch to you? You had the most vague job description
we'd ever seen.
You know how you guys said my job title was very secretive? It was even to me. So coming in, I didn't know really. I don't know if everyone knew what they wanted me to create. It was kind of just carte blanche in the beginning, blue sky. Just give us your ideas. And for someone
people
like me.
People always say that.
Yeah.
But they
so
seldom
I gave them,
mean it.
I gave them some ideas,
Was the show that's launching, word of mouth, was that part of your final interview, a pitch of the show wanted to do? No.
An idea generator such as myself will never give out an idea in an interview because people will just take them.
Generator.
I got that. That's so many buzz terms.
They're not mine. What? I'm now embarrassed that I'm using them.
So what makes your idea generator tick? I'm kidding. No. But so you don't pitch that at the... You would never give away going on upstairs.
A newbie might, but if you've learned from... bad experiences. Yeah,
right.
People can get burned.
100%.
And so you just start trying to generate ideas. Where do ideas come from for you?
I thought you might ask that because I've been asked that a bit. For me, it's different for everyone. It's a boring answer. I draw from life conversations. Mm-hmm. The three of us could be talking and you guys will say something and automatically, I don't know, something will just stick and I'll start thinking, let's attach something to this. And then it starts becoming a show. Well, that's how word of mouth started. I was talking with one of the people here. We were just thinking of alternative titles for another show we have. And he said, I don't know, maybe it should be called Word of Mouth or something. And I said, huh, that's a good title. And I just kind of put it in the back burner,
Right.
And then once I realized that the station really wanted me to try to create a local show, I just couldn't let go of this idea of word of mouth and thinking about what does word of mouth mean? When I moved, so I'm from Sacramento, but I haven't lived here for 20 years.
Wow.
Moved back last summer. And when I got here, it was like, this city does not look like my hometown in a good way, right?
Yeah.
There's so many things going on and I just had to catch up. So I started on Instagram following every local business, every influencer, just every account I could think of that has to do with Sacramento. And in 4 months, I was in the know. I knew what was going on more than coworkers that have been here for the last 10 years. There's a joke now in creative services that, ask Jessica what's going on this weekend.
That's the power of social media.
It is.
But it's also the power of asking people. We used to go to the town square and share information. We used to talk to other moms on the playground. Mm-hmm. But now we do go to social media to share those references. We'll ask people do you have a good doctor? Mm-hmm. And people will throw it out to a Facebook forum.
Yeah, it's digital word of mouth is exactly what it is. Last night, the Jonas Brothers were in town, and the only reason I knew that is because everyone was posting on Instagram last night.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's necessarily bad that you didn't know that.
So what is the premise? What is the premise of word of mouth?
So word of mouth is basically a local show that features anything and everything that locals are talking about. So what we do in a half hour is we featured 6 to 7 segments that are about 2 to 3 minutes each. And instead of your typical host who's maybe in studio that says, now we're going to go check out this restaurant on 3rd Street, We actually are ambushing people on the streets. Me, myself, am approaching people and getting turned down left and right. Right. People just put the hand up. No, don't talk to me. I'm going to work. And we say, hey, you know, do you want to chat with us about what you love about this area? And then we just start a conversation. And yeah, we start asking them questions. Usually it's a directed question like, do you think Sacramento is a dog city? And then we get a variety of answers. Oh. And then in the edit, we take those best answers and create a montage. And the last person who gives us some sort of soundbite becomes the tee up for the segment. So it's organized in that way. But yeah, essentially you have people on the street that are giving us suggestions and they're telling us where to go.
So you go, that last person, you go and you actually shoot a story with them?
Not necessarily. Yes and no. We haven't yet, but that could happen. No, they're just acting more as a toss, right? So like for instance, you say, the dog question, and somebody says, oh, you should check out the doggy day out program at Front Street because you can actually adopt a dog for a day. And it's like, oh, wow, that's cool. Then we have a transition, and the next segment is the doggy day out program. So they just really act as the lead-in.
I got you. So you would actually shoot a story at the place that they recommend. Okay, I got
correct.
You.
So our version of that on the news side, and I love that we work like 50 steps from each other, but our worlds are so different.
Completely
super
different.
Fun. So in news, our version of that is called Man on the Street.
MOS.
And we go up to people, same thing. Mm-hmm. We probably wouldn't use the word ambush, but sometimes it's exactly what we do.
Sometimes it is what it is.
Yeah.
You just got to get it done.
And I'm curious to know, like, what's your batting average on that? Because we're probably like, I know, what
I'm,
do you
yeah,
think?
I'm curious what yours is.
You know, it's
because you have KCRA.
I was just telling Deirdre, it's probably one of my least favorite things to do as a reporter. I've been doing this over 20 years, is getting somebody to talk to me just on the street. I can get any politician, any, you know, business owner, but that person on the street can be tough sometimes.
You're right. I'd say
I'm probably 8 out of 10. I'm not going to go up to you if I know you're not going to do it. I'm 8 out of 10 to get somebody who will want to do it, I would say.
Yeah, I'm definitely not that high of a batting average.
You should come hang out.
She is Deirdre Fitzpatrick.
Do you want to work on the show?
Maybe.
No, that is a tough one, but when you get them, it feels so good.
Yeah.
And they give you
a
good soundbite.
Or when you find somebody who has that, like, excitement and that real, like, willingness to want to tell somebody about how great they think something is. I think that's cool.
It is really cool. And what I have found is, like, the hard thing is convincing people to stay long enough to let me pitch them what I need them for. You know what I mean? Like, if they can hear me all the way out and I'm basically saying, I just want you to talk about the things you love about the city, then they're sold. But sometimes people kind of cut you off before you get to the point.
Because you're not running up to them with a KCRA mic flag.
No, yeah.
So, and that's one of the things. Sometimes that helps or hinders us.
Depends on the day.
It depends on the individual and what they're doing, but at least you're identified immediately.
Yeah, they don't know
who
I am.
So what do you say? Who are you with this big camera?
I used to get people to tattoo their eyelids. I'm not going to ask you to do that. However,
I'm no longer a human canvas producer.
Right, don't worry.
Right. No, you know, we change up our shots. We usually have an audio and a camera person that's kind of on standby, and they're just waiting for me to find someone. And I don't know. I run up to someone. I try not to run up because I don't want to scare them. But I just say, hey, my voice gets high, you know, that non-threatening voice. And it's like, hey, I'm a producer with KCRA. We're doing a special. Can I chat with you for a couple minutes? And
cool.
I also don't want people to be on the show if they're uncomfortable, because the show is about people who love the city and can't wait to talk about it. So if they're not feeling it, I get it. And I just move on to the next.
Yeah.
Next. No
hard
feelings.
I always tell people, like, it's my job is to make you look and feel good.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
and if somebody, you know, we'll interview somebody and I'll think, this person should not be on television. Or this person said something that, I don't know that was a real thing. You know, you also protect people when you do these interviews.
But when you have people
sometimes from themselves.
And sometimes you luck out and you interview somebody that is just a soundbite
machine.
Oh, that is the best thing ever.
Because that's what keeps you doing it.
People that are listening, there are times that you find people that are real slow talkers, or you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but when you find that person that's just concise in a nice 15, 20 seconds.
It's like a drug.
Just warms my heart.
Yep. Yeah. They're the best people. You're right. It is why I do what I do. Like, all of it's so hard, but when you find someone and it's just like, oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
For being so awesome.
Another big difference between what you do versus what we do is we work really fast and we're like in and out. You are not. So talk about what it takes to put a show like that together.
It does take a while. So I would have liked it to take even longer, but I mean, you know, there's three phases of production in my role. There's pre-production, production, and post. And I would have loved pre-production to be 4 weeks, but on a show like this, you maybe have 2 weeks, and that 2 weeks is doing a lot of research, figuring out where you're going to do your street interviews, just thinking about what types of questions we're going to answer or ask, obviously hiring your crew and making sure that's all on the same page. Once you get all that together, then it's just a lot of coordination of logistics. Mm-hmm.
And then shooting that story at that whatever business or where the best margarita is.
Yeah,
or
we call it like a, you guys know, a pre-produced package, and it's, we shoot those separately. So we have our streeter days, we call our interview streeters, and then we have our segment days where we shoot those packages. And, you know, you do that in about 10 days, and then the edit is what takes forever.
Sure.
Especially with something like this, when you are trying to craft something that has a little bit of verite, do you guys know verite? Mm-hmm. The reality moments, the story moments. That takes a while. You have 10 hours of footage that an editor has to comb through, and you're crafting a story.
Wow.
10 hours.
That's insane.
That's 10 hours a day, right? That's for one segment. That's not even including the streeters that we want.
Sometimes I'm annoyed if I come back and I have like 30 minutes of stuff.
I know. You get annoyed a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would too if I had 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yes, you would, for a different reason. That's right. So does this air, is this going to air weekly or a couple times a month, or do we know yet?
We don't know fully. The plan right now is, obviously, it's airing on Monday the 21st at 7 o'clock. And then, I, you know, there are some chats about having maybe a rollout of another one in November and December. We'll see how that goes. But we're going to see what people think. And if the community likes it, then we'll keep producing them. So
I think that's exciting.
Isn't it interesting?
Yeah, like original programming.
Yeah.
Isn't always done at a TV station. You know, sometimes.
You know, back in the day.
Back in the day, they did.
Pre-cable.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very common that people were doing their own versions of PM Magazine and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But cable really took over it. So, yeah, it is a lot of fun, and it's going to be cool to be able to see things that we all locally know and then see how it, you know, applies to other parts of the country, too, at some point. So you mentioned verite. Mm-hmm. What's something else? Because I love knowing how all this stuff kind of comes together. Help us look at TV a little differently. So when we're watching like the Kardashians or Housewives or any of these like unscripted reality type shows, tell us how to watch those.
That's a good question. Well, I would say there's the different terms of each thing, right? So you have your verite moment, which is the two wives on the couch with some sort of alcoholic beverage, and they're getting in a fight, and we just kind of let the cameras roll.
That's every single one of them.
That's the verite, and then you have the formal interview, which they're sitting.
Is this like the confessional?
No, well, yes, that's like the confessional in real world, but yeah, it's usually, but it's perfectly lit, right?
Yeah.
They have the backlight, the
key
light.
Let me ask you real quick, and just to jump in here, I've always wondered this because I like reality TV. So you have an incident
that happens.
Don't you love
that he was like, I had to talk him into coming
in here? Meanwhile, he's like,
now I want to be quiet.
Yeah.
So you have something crazy that happens, say, in like Vanderpump Rules or something like that. And then you've got like Jax Taylor talking about it.
I love how he knows Jax.
Right? You got Jax talking about what happened. When do they do that interview? It almost seems like it happens seconds. That's so weird to me.
That's a really good point. So it depends on the show. It depends on the budget. And it depends on the time. Really great shows, they'll do those formal interviews the same day so that you get... So that the person who's doing the interview isn't having to do this recall thing.
Right.
And it's fresh in their mind.
And they're fired up.
Yeah, and the interview's better. But because of that, what was the term we used earlier? Expedited reality. Sometimes you don't have time in your shoot day to do those interviews. So you'll notice some of the things to look for is that sometimes people in interviews are wearing the same clothes in every interview. And that's to keep the continuity together because they might be shooting interviews for 3 months every Saturday, covering all range of topics from every episode, and then the editors are going to move it around and use it here. They might use a comment for episode 8 on episode 2, but to allow you to do that, that person has to be wearing the same outfit the whole time.
So do they just hang that up in the production van
or
something?
It's like, basically.
Interesting.
Or they'll have like...
Okay, now I know. I've always wondered that.
Why are people willing to do reality TV? I mean, you've been around so many people. Do they always have something they want? Like, I see the housewives because they've all got a product to hawk. Or they want attention.
Mm-hmm.
But why are people willing to do it, do you think? What drives it now?
I think, obviously, there are people who are in it for different reasons. I think some people think that they're going to get paid a lot of money. That's the quickest myth I can put to rest.
Really?
Yeah, you know, you're
some of the big names make big money, but...
Yeah, but they have to be on a show that's successful for seasons. Like Chip and Joanna, I bet they made nothing that first season.
To begin with,
And that show could have tanked, and then they would have made nothing.
Right.
And I don't want to give the number, but it's a low number that people
get
paid for episodes.
You know, they've made a lot of money off those towels I buy at Target.
Well, now they have their own network.
And they have their own network. And they own the product now.
And I think as people kind of apply for reality shows, they've become more educated, and I think some people get that now. They get that... You're signing your business up to be, you know, exposed to cameras 24/7 because you're hoping that it'll pay off in the end. Some people, I think, just love being the center of attention. Those are my favorite people to cast because, Yeah, because they're those people that don't have filters,
right? Those are the people we hate working with.
Well, I've heard that it can be very tough to get on like a show like Real Housewives of New York or one of those shows. Mm-hmm. That Cohen is really, really involved in the process, and you got to be somebody special.
You do.
Not just the loudest in the room necessarily.
Yeah.
You got to have something.
Yeah, and it's everything, right? It's like, what if you're amazing and you check off all the boxes, but you have blue eyes and dark hair, and we already have someone who has blue eyes and dark hair. We can't have two of those people,
right.
So you're not going to make it. It's
right.
Little things, you know? Yeah, but I do think people want to be on TV because it's their 15 seconds, you know? A lot of people aren't actors, but this is their way to kind of become a celebrity with really not having necessarily a skill.
Mm-hmm.
They can make a career out of that. And some people are just, you know, good people who like have a family business that they're really passionate about that they actually just are excited to share with people.
Or they're just people you ran into on the street and they want to tell you about something cool going on in their hometown.
Yeah. That is one thing that happens to me. I think I have a mostly casting producer mind. So when I'm interacting with people and I meet someone who has a really just charismatic personality, I'm immediately thinking, how can I turn you into a show? You know,
are you looking at us like that?
I mean, maybe.
I'm like, I should have been more animated.
You guys are already on TV. Someone already found you guys.
We always say that the best reality show would be what happens in the commercials. But I don't think
they're
on Chill.
No.
Right? No, that would have to be on a different channel.
We should do a YouTube channel. Have pitched an idea that had something along those lines.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm all about lifting that veil. I love that.
Yeah.
Because that's the authentic stuff.
Let's do this.
Let's do
it. Who do we have to talk to?
Right.
Do you think if, like, you're doing all, like, life over, you would have ever gone on reality TV?
Boy, that's a bomb of a question. I know I would have been into it.
Probably.
Back in the day, like in my early 20s or
if
something
had
like
the
that.
Opportunity, you would have done
that. Absolutely. If I had yes.
How about now?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. I mean, those cameras are everywhere. I don't want, you know, my personal life out there. And I mean, a lot of these people in these shows that are just starting out, that are not huge hits, are not making very much money for it.
Right.
It's just that chance for fame.
So what I hear is Teo has a price.
I do.
So Jessica, if you're developing that reality show for us, just have a good budget. All right. Thank you so much for co-hosting today. Super
Absolutely.
Fun to have all your entertainment knowledge in here. What's a good way for people to keep up with you on social media?
Facebook, it's at KCRA Teo.
That's right. And then you can follow the show on Instagram at Dying to Ask Podcast. And I like talking to you on Instagram. You can follow me at Run Read Sip. And could you please do me a favor and leave a rating or review for this show? Tell me what you thought of Teo sitting in on the show.
Yeah.
We'd love to know.
Be kind.
Yes. Those ratings and reviews help us grow the Dying to Ask podcast. So when you leave one, it's like a really good thing for us. And then if you could subscribe and share it as well, that would be a good thing. It's a good thing.
It is.
Is that Martha Stewart?
It is Martha Stewart.
It is.
Very nice Martha Stewart
reference. Thank you. All right. We'll see you next time on Dying to Ask.